Welcome to John Wayne Lied to You, the storytelling podcast featuring little old me, tiddly dee, ho ho he, I'm on my knee, asking you to please be here with me today one more time in the Library of Evil, nestled in the east wing of Wayne Manor. That's right, me, John Wayne, here with you today once again. Thank you. Thank you so much for being here for another story time and whatever it is we're doing here. I've got the old grandpappy medicine kicking like a fucking mule this morning. I just took like three little pufferoos and already I'm up there with the Venusians on Venus. With the third eye and running a cafe on the Twilight Zone with a bus coming through, and we'll all show our IDs and we'll all get on the bus. But that's how I'm feeling right now, and I think that that's a good thing. I've got some coffee as well. It's a nice Sunday morning once again. Got cold all of a sudden. That's fucking weird. Like yesterday, it was kind of cool in the morning and rainy, and then it just got like straight cold for at least for Houston. I don't know. It went from... I had a sleeveless shirt on in the morning. I went to the brewery, Eighth Wonder Brewery here in Houston. Shouts out, great beer. My buddy Adam's birthday. Shouts out Adam. And I put a hoodie on when I got there. I was like, oh, this hoodie. But it went into full daddy leather weather by the end of the day. Say that three times fast. But yeah, it got cold and it's cold this morning. But it's nice. It feels good. It's a good, makes you feel alive in your bones and in your boners. This week has been a pretty chill week. Neo Benchy was on Tuesday. It went much better than the last time. I know if you heard the last episode I did when I talked about a few episodes ago that the Neo Benchy show didn't go so well, and I felt like I pretty much bombed it myself. But it went a lot better. Still not completely happy with my performance, to be honest. But, hey, that's what it's all about. It's getting there. It's going to click soon. I feel like the third time will be the charm. All the new components and new moving pieces and parts of the show will click together with a satisfying click, I guess, that we'll all feel. So it went well. If you're here in the Houston area, first Tuesday of every month, we're down at the Secret Group doing Neo Benchy at 8 o'clock. You know, come see this third one. Come see it all click. Why not? It'll be fun. other than that, you know, I've just the day job's been chill, just doing that during the day. Working on some new stories and stuff this week. Doing some hardcore revisions on a manuscript that I finished that it's being sent off here within a day or two. So I'm very much scrutinizing that and using a lot of free time on that right now, which feels weird because I know I'm working on something, but I feel like for some reason I feel like if I'm not actually writing something new, like or writing words, like or writing a story, then I'm not working hard. And I don't know if that's a good mindset to have or not, because I need the revisions and the things that I'm doing on this piece are important, very important and necessary. and it's not like a passive read through, you know, I'm like kind of like scrutinizing every sentence almost as I go and like stuff. So I guess it is work, it's hard work, but I just feel like for some reason if I'm not writing, I'm not working, and that's weird. Maybe that's something I need to get over, or maybe not. Maybe that's why I am successful at times. I don't know. Who knows? But that's what I have been doing on the writing field this week. I sent a couple stories. I got a rejection for a story, and this story's been roundly rejected by so many publications because of its disturbingness, I guess. Like, it's like one disturbing factor in this story, and I'm not going to give it away because it will be published one day, I guarantee it, somewhere, and then I'll be able to say, read that story and tell me how that doesn't do disturbingness justice. because it is, but it doesn't, I don't know, for some reason in my twisted brain, I'm like, well, why can't everybody think this is funny? You know, but whatever, it doesn't matter. It'll get out there. And if not, I've definitely already have a very clear picture idea of what of a performance reading to do of this story. And I might just make that my my performance for the Ultimate Bizarro Showdown at BizarroCon this year in November. So we'll see. That may be a little foreshadowing, or I make it so high I even forgot that I said this. But just time will tell. So that's been going on. My lovely fiance was out of town this weekend. She just arrived home this morning. So I was homeboy alone, and you know what? I did not do anything crazy. I think I needed some time to myself. Just like all by myself. All by myself, like everybody does. You know, I worked on stuff a lot, and just kind of decomposed and decompressed and decompiled for a little while, and I guess that's good. I guess you got to do that every once in a while, even though I feel super guilty about it for some reason. Like, all I did was watch a couple of documentaries and smoke weed, and I got super drunk in the morning. Should I feel guilty? I don't know. Maybe that's part of the whole, you know, patois that makes this whole John Wayne truck keep a going, I guess. Maybe I'm overanalyzing this too much. You know what? It's this grandpappy's medicine. Like I said, kicking like a mule, and that is why we are here today. Welcome again to John Wayne Lied to You. Let's go ahead and get into our tarot reading this week, guys. Our three-card tarot reading that I do weekly on myself for every show. This one made me think a lot. Honestly, it's not like some happy, cheery thing here. Like I said, sometimes I just kind of focus on something when I'm shuffling the cards, or what I'm thinking about was weighing heavy on me or whatever. And I wrote down, you know, before I did the cards, was thinking about, you know, I'm moving forward. Am I losing momentum? I feel stuck. I feel like I'm losing it. I feel lazy. Like I said earlier, is that not working hard? Like, maybe that's coming from that. But it's a patience that I need, and I need to, you know, every time I think I find balance in things, it's like something else gets thrown out of balance. So it's like, I need to keep some balance going and, you know, and some clarity on those things. So that's what I was thinking as I was shuffling up the cards. And then, this is what I drew. My first card was the Tower. This card is pretty ominous looking in and of itself, and it kind of sets this tone at the beginning of this reading for me. The card itself represents the destruction of peace and harmony in your life from out of the blue. This may be a time, and like the picture on the card is like a tower that's being struck by lightning, and like two people have jumped out of the tower to, like, they're basically to their deaths rather than, I guess, burn alive in the tower type thing. So, according to this card, this may be a time of great turmoil as you seek to understand where and how you went wrong in some way. It could be an experience that shakes the foundation of your security and forces you to question your beliefs. Examples are divorce, death, financial failure, health issues. Well, I haven't had an experience like this lately. I don't think, at least as far as I was talking about. I mean, I have been divorced, and that's an experience in and of itself. So I don't know if it's referring, you know, I don't know. I think this is more about a balance thing, to be quite honest with you. It also says this most likely brings chaos into your life. Ask where this is coming from. Is it conscious or subconscious? And that's something that struck a chord with me. Is this a conscious chaos that I'm experiencing, or am I subconsciously throwing myself into a chaos regarding certain situations? You know, is that something I'm doing to myself? through my own like subconscious thoughts. I don't know, that definitely is a possibility. Some things came to mind when I read that, honestly. It says, can also represent your personal defenses you've built around you, and the removal of these to allow your true self to come through. You know, that's true with me. I think it's true with a lot of people. You you only show so much of yourself to certain people, and maybe other people, different aspects. But yeah, if it's like, if you think about it and visualize it as walls or towers or whatever that are blocking the view of something, i.e. you, and you know, the removal of those things allows you to show your true self rather than the self that you only want these particular people to see, I guess I get from that. Now, the positive spin on this is, with destruction comes creation, and an awakening. With inspiration, freedom, and reality, and the release from bondage. So, you know, what I get from that is, like, you know, with every, you know, just after the destruction, it's going to come the creation. The, you know, this is what basically, if you're just, I would say, completely rocked to your foundation, as this card is saying, like, these experiences do to you, which, yeah, divorce really does. Absolutely. But then the flip side is that of that is there is this rebuilding, and I would say it's within your, this is just my take, like, it's in your best interest to rebuild in the way that you want to, you know, you're with the true self, like, going back to that, rebuild without those walls and without those things that are blocking who you want to be and how, you know, or who you are to other people. And that's an opportunity to do that, and I think that's what I've done, like, as I've referenced before in other episodes of John Wayne 2.0, of myself, that, you know, that's what I'm doing, and I'm still rebuilding that tower, I guess. But maybe this is just something to think about. Don't put other things up there. It says gets you out of your comfort zone and allows you to grow. Which I agree. I guess that's kind of reiterating what I just said about growing, and, you know, you're out of your comfort zone and you're creating this new, you're building this new creation. It's not going to be that same tower that you've maybe already built a couple times, or that you're so used to maintaining, or whatever. So, you know, it's going to be different. So that's kind of a rough card. You know, it's not, definitely not a happy one, but it's got that happy-ish ending, but it's still ultimately up to you. It's not like that's some kind of guarantee that just, like, because you've been destroyed or an aspect of you has been destroyed, that it's going to be recreated in a great way. That's still up to you, I think. So that's still kind of serious. next card I got was the Six of Pentacles. Now, this is kind of a weird card right in the middle of this reading. This card represents being in harmony, specifically with finances. This is the ins and outs of your money is balanced. Also, charity. This card is about charity and offering assistance, either monetarily or with time and wisdom. So to people in need, like, and I can see that within. You know, I'm very fortunate that I'm definitely not wealthy by any means or rich, you know, but I figured out how to get by with what I have and be happy, and really that's what it's ultimately about. So I feel like I have that going for me, as far as maybe that is. It's not like I'm, this card kind of makes it seem like you did it, you know, like, I don't know, like, you won the prices, right, or something, I don't know, I'm overthinking it, but I'm definitely, like, as far as the charity aspect goes, like, I definitely try to always, at least with my time, and with the time and wisdom aspect, I feel more, I have more of that to offer, I guess, charity-wise, so I should think about that, rather than being super selfish with my time. You know, and money, you know, maybe I should think more about how I spend my money. Maybe I need to redirect some of it back more into the local arts or something like that. I'm not sure. That's something for me to think about. So think of how to support your friends and family in a way that encourages them to stand on their own two feet. So this is like while you're helping these people, I took this as, you know, that's a temporary thing. You can't let them continue to lean on you and think that that's the way to do it. It's like you have to do it in a way that, you know, of course, shows how they can do it. And as far as like I think about this with time, the time and wisdom thing, it's like, you know, offering my advice to people if they want it. But they ultimately would have to, you know, I would need to think about showing them this is how I do it, and you can also do it this way with your own take on it so they can use it more effectively for them, rather than just maybe step by step copying my exact advice. You know, I don't know. That was just interesting. And the last card I got was the Five of Swords. Again, this is not a super bright card. This can be a card of conflict and disagreeing with others, ending in tension and hostility. It can represent conquest as well. You know, the card itself is like this dude that's got, he's, you know, kind of beaten his enemies that are walking away from him, and he's got all their swords, and he's, but he looks like he's all like, you know, he's not like happy, he's just like, yeah, and fuck you, man, like look on his face, like hostility, still this tension is still there. It's if you're aggressive in your conquests and struggles, you will soon accomplish your objectives. So that sounds good, right? But if you're passive, you will end up compromising. And I think that, you know, that to me, I was kind of like, okay, I'm all about conquest and meeting my, you know, conquering my goals. And I can be a little aggressive in that, but there are some that I am passive in, and that's where, like, if you're passive, you end up compromising. I.e. when I had went off on my episode about, you know, artists getting ripped off, it's that's where we don't need to be passive. There's a fear, underlying fear there, I think, especially when you're at a certain level of not wanting to lose gigs or lose, you know, or be outcast because you're too outspoken or something like that. But that's a fear that, you know, I know I personally am working hard to get over. And I think, you know, that's something we all need to think about. You know, because if you're passive in what you want, you won't get it. You will always compromise. You'll always settle. And I don't want to do that anymore. This card represents ambition, but in a negative sense. Too much ambition without regard leads to loss for everyone. And I think I've had this card a while back, and that made me think, like, I've got a lot of ambition, and I do go out and try hard on this writing career journey I'm on, but maybe I need to reexamine that. And hopefully I'm not doing that to a fault, to where it is hurting people around me, because I'm just so tunnel visioned, one minded about everything, or about one thing specifically. If you want to win at any cost, you will discover the price is not worth the reward. Yeah, I mean, yes and no, I guess. On that, for me, I feel like I'm not, maybe, but I don't know if I go to try to win at any cost, though. That's the thing. I'm a little bit more mindful about it, but maybe I need to be more mindful or less mindful, but I definitely need to think about that. This card says you have overcome a challenge. So it's telling you have worked hard to overcome a challenge, which I can relate to. And you have the right to feel proud, but not arrogant and invincible. No, there are other rivals out there to focus on. So basically, you know, that's the lesson here that kind of wraps it all up at the end. Like, yeah, you did do something. You've done something, one thing. It's a part of something bigger. And you can, you know, and I've talked about this. I do feel weird, like, stopping and being like, oh, I did a good job on that. And I need to definitely do that, not to a great length, but acknowledge at least the accomplishments that I've done. And I think that that holds true for a lot of people. But like I've said before, that my biggest fear is becoming arrogant and allowing hubris to pull me down and without me even realizing it. So I'm hyper vigilant about that and mindful about it. But if you, you know, if you think you're like big shit after you've done this one conquest, you know, that's where you're going to fuck up, because that you just did one thing, and then now you're going to be faced with this whole new set of problems, this whole new set of rivals, as it says. And if you're just all like thinking about how awesome and big your dick is, then you're just going to, you know, fail. So while that wasn't, you know, that reading wasn't necessarily super like everything's going to work out, but you know that they're not supposed to be like that. It was a little bit more of a bummer reading, but who cares? It's because I, you know, it's for thinking about these things, so you don't have these bummer moments happen for real, I guess. So there, wow. So now that we're all happy and fine, we'll go into the story this week. This story, I don't know, it just came to me out of the blue the other day. I was thinking about things, and you know, I used to be in speech and theater all through middle school and high school and all that kind of stuff, and we went to speech tournaments, and well, this is about a speech tournament I went to. We'll call this story The Retainer. So, this story takes place back when I was a junior in high school, I believe. So, this is 95, maybe. Ugh, excuse me, that's reality. 95, 96, something like, no, not 96, 94, 95, something like that. Back in the day. So, I was a theater and speech guy, kid guy, whatever I was. So I did the plays and stuff at school, and we did the one-act plays and went to competition and stuff, but I also did speech tournaments. And if you don't know what those are, they're these, you know, weekend-long events, basically, that, you know, there's the debate half, so all the debate team that did, you know, Lincoln Douglas debate and whatever the other one is that I'm sure you're screaming at your phone right now. It's this one, you idiot, but I don't remember. I was a speech guy. So we, you know, you would do performances on my end. Like I did humorous and dramatic and duet and whatever the fuck else they had. But those were my main bread and butters, those ones right there. And you would do basically a 10-minute solo performance of a funny scene from a play, usually, or another play. A script of some kind where you do all the characters yourself, different voices, you know, you look a different way as one character and turn this way for the other one. You kind of learned a lot of that stuff, and I was into it, and I liked doing it. So I would do the dramatic, you know, which was the serious one, and that was actually my preferred one to do when I started doing speech. I started doing dramatic because I just liked it better. But then once I started getting more into it, I did try to do humorous and stuff. There's Serby out there. Hey, Serby. He's out there just doing his thing and barking away. Thank you, Serby. Where were we? Oh yes. So you perform dramatic and humorous pieces, and then there was duets, and those could be up to 12 minutes long, and that was, you know, you obviously you and one other person doing a scene together. And you know, that's the thing, that's like the gist of it. And you go to a high school, you get on the bus on a Friday after school, and you go to whatever high school this tournament's being held at, and there's like a million kids there from all over the city or whatever. And if it was like a bigger tournament, sometimes, you know, people would come from out of state and things like that. There were just different tournaments that held different sway. And All of this is done in the hopes of qualifying for state, the state tournament, the TFA state tournament, which is Texas Forensic Association, and UIL is involved in there somewhere. And so you wanted to do that so that you could go to nationals and just be the big swinging dick of speech tournaments. You know, and at the time, that was, it was very important to me. It was very important for me to do well at what I was doing. And I was not bad at it. I was, you know, pretty decent. I would win things. I would win trophies and whatnot. And I seemed to do all right. And I enjoyed it quite a bit. I wasn't the best, but I wasn't the worst. So anyway, the way this works is you go on Friday night. There's like a 3-round system. You do the prelims, so you'd be in. This is just everybody that enters that event, you know. So you would have like X amount of rooms for the prelims, and you'd go into yours, and there'd be like 8 people in there, and you'd have to do your performance, and there's a judge that's giving you feedback on a ballot and ranking you. And so like usually the first like couple, maybe like if you got first or second in prelims, you advance to semis. Sometimes it was first, second, third, depending on how many people were in the event. So you'd go to semis, and if you got first or second there, you know, or whatever, you go to finals. And then when you go to finals, like, that, there's just that one room and the best 6 people, and it's usually, like, everyone, like, packed, all the finals rooms, like, people will come watch and shit. So it's, like, a big audience and stuff and lots of laughs and shit if you can do it, or cries or whatever the fuck you're doing. Lots of fun, right? So I would go to these like almost every weekend, and it would last all weekend. Like you'd go Friday night, like I said, and get the prelims out of the way. You'd have to go back Saturday, like at 6 a.m. and start and make it, you know, hopefully you made it through, or else like you, if you got eliminated right in the morning, then you're pretty much stuck there all day, which is good and bad. It could be bad. I always made the most of it if I had to just hang out, because you're there with friends and meeting new friends from other schools, and just have, you're just having a gay old time, in the sense of fun, or being gay, whatever you want. It's theater, people. So we're there, you know, like I said, it's an all day thing, and come home late Saturday night after the award ceremony, and you'd have like a trophy or not or whatever, but it'd always be late because, you know, you'd be driving in the bus and blah, blah, blah. And that's a speech tournament, right? So I went to Spring High School. And back when I went, it was a little bit different than it is now, in that we were the professional school. Like, at least, okay, so back then, like, it's very different than it is now. Dress code-wise, completely different. Facial hair, hair length, the fact that kids, like, I have a very good friend of the family, the good friend of the show, who teaches in a high school today, and it is, and I know a lot of other high school teachers too, but I mean, these kids have tattoos now and shit. Like, that's out of your mind, crazy. And they're on their phones in class tweeting. The rules that we had back when I was in high school was, if you had long hair, it couldn't go past your collar of your shirt. You could have no facial hair at all. Not even like 5 o'clock shadow type things. I had friends that would, you know, have to basically dry shave with a Bic razor because they just had stubble, you know. They were savages back then, you know. They had testosterone pump. I'm still waiting for mine to come in. But those guys back then, I felt bad for them. It's like, I can't help it, you know, whatever. So none of that. Definitely I mean, we weren't really in the phone business back then, but there were pagers. I had a pager. It was white, and I'm a baller. You weren't allowed to have that. You have that, your pager goes off. It's like, that's the worst thing that could ever fucking happen to you. It's like, you go to in-school suspension for, like, days because you had a pager. Definitely no tattoos. I don't even want to get into what the dress code was, but you basically couldn't wear anything. And earrings on men, on dudes, big no-no, not allowed. That's a no-no. But back then, you know, it was starting to come around, like, let's get our ears pierced because that's like, you know, cool now, and I'm cool, you know. Back then I was dabbling, you know. I was like, I knew I wanted to look a certain. I knew I liked these things, you know, earrings. That was cool. I'm a cool guy or whatever. Maybe I'm a nerd. Who fucking cares? But I wanted to get my ear pierced, because I thought it was cool. But then when my buddy Brandon, who was also in speech with me, we did one of my best friends growing through high school. He was an amazing performer, very talented, far more talented than I. Once he got his ear pierced first, that like broke the seal. Then it was like, okay, well now I have to do it. Right, so I did. I got my ear pierced, and it was the left ear back then. That was the one, that the cool one. You had to get it done. Like, I think if you got it in your right ear, that was supposed to mean you were gay. But I think just being gay means you're gay. I don't think an earring really matters. But you know, this was back in the 90s, like I said, and everyone was an idiot. So you know, you get the stud, you get pierced, and it's like, all right, and you have to let it heal and all this shit. But of course, you know, it's during school year we get this thing, we get this shit done. And, you know, we can't wear earrings. But Brandon tells me, he's like, don't worry, dude, we got this. Like, they sell these plastic retainers at the piercing place in the mall, and, you know, we just take out the earrings and we put those in, and that keeps it from closing up. And it's, you know, and it's not, we're not wearing an earring, you know. And what this thing was, it's like, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with retainers for jewelry. Like, I used to have one in my labret when I had my labret pierced, because I couldn't have, you know, a fucking ball of steel hanging out of my face when I was at work. Back then, like at Jason's Deli and shit. So it was just like it's like a plastic piece that goes through, like a post that goes through, keeps the hole open, and there's a round clear back, so it, you know, it stops against your ear. You know, you put it in, it stops in the back, it's poking through, whatever, and that's how it works, right? So we're like, perfect. So we, our theater teacher, basically Miss Green, ran our fucking lives back then. We couldn't, basically, I don't, we, you know, I look back at it now and I'm like, God, why were we such little pussies? But we couldn't fart without asking permission from Miss Green, basically. Like, this was something like where before school, we were in the theater room. We were in the room hanging out doing that. And then that was our last period class because we were like on the team. And so then you'd be there for like hours after school doing that. That was like our main thing. So we always had to make sure everything fit around theater, you know, including, you know, making sure we followed all these fucking rules, and then all these extra rules that Miss Green put on top of us, where, you know, what we had to wear to speech tournaments as far as what was considered looking good, looking professional, and how we could react to winning or not winning. We had to clap for everybody. If somebody from our school won a trophy, we were allowed to stand up and clap. We were not allowed to hoot and holler or scream or yell like other schools. It was unprofessional, she said, and disrespectful in some fucking way. And we also had to, like, you know, just the guys had to wear, we basically had to wear like a suit, all right? So you ever want to see, you know, go to a speech tournament, you'll see a bunch of creepy kids running around in suits. It's fucking weird. And the girls would have to wear, you know, professional, like a skirt or dress and hose and shoes and whatever. We weren't allowed to change out of this shit until after the awards ceremony. So if you got eliminated in the morning, like, you, everyone brought clothes to change into. So you could change into your clothes for like the afternoon, but you had to go put your good shit on for the awards ceremony because we had to look respectful. I don't know. It was, like I said, she ran our fucking shit. She made me cut my hair, like, on a side note, so many times for plays, and it's, you know, it was just it really pissed me off when I think about it. So anyway, Brandon and I get these earrings, these retainers. We show them to Miss Green. We're like, look, you know, and she's first, of course, she's disappointed that we did it anyway, but we're like, look, we got this in, you can't even see it, you know. And the flat plastic part, you know, we pushed the post through the front of our earlobe, and the little backing or the plastic part was on the front of our ear, right? And it's just a clear plastic, very, very tiny disc-shaped thing to keep it from going all the way through your ear and then you losing it. If we put it the other way through, from the back through, it was just like this post thing kind of sticking through our ear, and it looked a little bit like, it just looked gross. It kind of just looked bad to us because, you know, this thing was kind of like poking through and shit. And plus, if it was the other way, that disc kind of, you know, it blended in with your ear and it kind of covered the redness around the hole a little bit. So that's the way we wore it. We showed it to Miss Green. She was like, okay, that's fine. Just, I don't want to hear that you guys, if we're at a tournament, you wear those the whole time. You do not, I don't care that it's the weekend, you don't come in earrings, you don't put earrings in during the day, you don't leave with earrings on the bus home, you wear those until you get home. And we're like, okay, no problem, no problem. So, I'm, like I said, like I've said before, you know, I've always been like a good kid growing up, but if you remember when my mom came on that one episode, we talked about, like, I started getting a little squirrely, like, junior and senior year, end of sophomore year, where I was kind of, like, trying to figure things out, and I would get a little bit more, I was testing how much shit I would take. Like, I would bite back a little bit more sometimes, especially if someone was accusing me of doing something I did not do, and they didn't believe me. I would lose my mind. So, we're at a tournament, and Miss Green cannot be at this tournament because I believe she had broken her ankle and had surgery on her ankle that weekend or something. So she could not be at the tournament. So Mr. Ellis, the debate coach, took both teams, all of us, the debaters and the interpreters out there, and was in charge, right? So we're doing our thing, competing. I did on Friday night. I think I had broken, which means gone to the advance to the next round in I think the dramatic that I was doing, and maybe a duet. I think I was doing with somebody else. So I advanced in a couple things, and I was back to compete. And so I went to my first round of, you know, the semis and dramatic. And I performed, and I thought I did really well, you know, especially watching like the rest of the room. I was like, okay, I think I did good in this. I think I probably broke out of this one. Cool. So I go back to the cafeteria. That's where everyone hangs out and their snacks and partying or whatever, as much as you can. And Mr. Ellis comes from wherever the coach's lounge is into the cafeteria looking for me. Very serious looking, and he's holding a piece of paper, and so he pulls me out of the cafeteria into a hallway, which I didn't think much of at first, because what I could see in his hand as he was holding the ballot from my round, where it was a ballot, I assumed it was mine. You know, it wasn't unusual for a coach to pull you out to, like, give you a if you advanced, to give you especially a note, like, that maybe a judge left on there. So that's what I thought was going on. He pulls me out. He looks fucking pissed. And I was like, yeah. And he said, read this. And he hands me my ballot. And immediately I look at the bottom, see what I got. I got third. I was like, ah, damn. I guess I didn't break, huh? And he's like, not that. Read this. There's a note at the bottom that this judge has written that says, you know, this is a very strong performance, would have gotten first or second, or would have ranked higher. However, whatever is sparkling in this performer's earlobe is very distracting. Therefore, third place, whatever. And I was like, okay. I was kind of confused. I was like, well, what does that mean? And he was like, I cannot believe that you went against what you were told and wore your earring. And I was like, I wasn't wearing my earring, I'm wearing this. And he said, John Wayne, it says on there that you're wearing an earring. And I was like, no, it doesn't. It says something sparkling. This is what I was wearing. And then he's like, don't lie to me. And I was like, I'm not lying to you. And I just lost it. I started yelling. I was like, I'm not lying to you. This is what I was wearing. If you don't believe me, you can, you know, whatever. And he's like, call your father. You're going home. And I was like, fine. I don't want to be here anyway. You stupid ass. Like, whatever. Calling me a liar. You fucking whatever. And it was just like bad. So I go out back into the cafeteria. I storm out there and I'm just like fuming. Everyone's like, what the fuck happened? So I tell him. And then I grab like Brandon and he's got his in, and I'm like, man, this is all I've been wearing. Tell him. So we go to the coach's lounge and I'm like, look, he's wearing it. I'm wearing it. This is what we told him. And he's like, well, I already called Miss Green and she wants you to call her. So we have to go out to the payphone and call our fucking drama coach. And we both talked to her and like, Miss Green, we're wearing what we showed you. And she's like, well, that's not what he thinks. And I was like, well, I don't care what he thinks. So then and then she's like, well, we'll talk about this on Monday. I'm like, great. So then I call my dad. My dad has to come pick us. I'm like, I told him, you know, and my dad, he was a tough dude. He could be mad at, you know, this could go either way. Cause he had to drive like 40 minutes out to come pick me up from somewhere on a Saturday morning, mid morning, afternoon. And then he was going to get an ear beating from this debate coach about me breaking some rules. Told my dad, I was like, I did not do that. I did not wear my earring. I'm wearing the retainer thing just like I showed it. I promise you, Dad. And he's like, well, why doesn't he believe you? And I said, I don't know. He just won't believe me. He refuses to believe me. So my dad shows up and just basically intimidates the absolute hell out of Mr. Ellis. I thought it was awesome. He comes out there and he just stands there and just looks right at him. And he's like, so what's the problem here? And he's like, well, he was wearing his earring and it says right here. And he was specifically told not to. And my dad said, he said he wasn't wearing his earring. You calling my boy a liar? He said, I'm not calling him a liar. It says here that he said he was wearing the thing that's in his ear right now. Are you calling him a liar? And he's like, my dad said, I've never known my boy to lie. So why would he lie about this? This seems like a stupid thing to lie about. And he's like, well, you know, either way, he was... disrespectful and he just needs to go home. He's like, and I'm gonna take him home, that's fine, don't worry about that, I'm here. He's like, but I'm gonna tell you this, he did not lie about that. And then he took me and we left and we walked out and I was like, sorry, Dad. And he's like, that's all right, you didn't do anything wrong. That guy, I don't know what his problem is. He's like, I don't know, but he's mad. And he's like, what's gonna happen? I was like, I don't know, we have to talk to our speech teacher, our coach on Monday, and then probably talk to him, and you know, whatever. So my dad was like, oh, all right, that's cool. You want to go buy a PlayStation? And I was like, yeah, let's go. And actually, getting the PlayStation, that's a whole nother story in and of itself that I will tell, because I remembered both of those stories because they were connected. So we'll go to that. But like, follow up on this story is, when I do go back on Monday to school, I have to talk to Mr. Ellis and Miss Green privately first, where they give me an ear beating and I stick to my gun. I'm like, look, I didn't fucking do it. And then it's like, people like left, like other people like just left the tournament and stuff. Some of our friends, our other interp friends, I called their parents, or it was something like that, where people left and didn't go to their rounds in like protest. And it got to such a degree where Miss Green like had this big meeting with us, and then she started crying while she was telling us how like we can't be divided as a team and a school and da da da, and it was like so eye-rollingly lame. But we all like, you know, kind of were like, yes, Miss Green, we'll be friends with everybody. We'll like Mr. Ellis, but secretly we still didn't, because he was a little fucking cunt about that. Sorry. But anyway, yeah, that sucked. It was like, man, I wasn't actually doing. I could understand if I was trying to get away with a fast one. If I was trying to pull a fast one and trying to get away with it and trying to lie about it on top of it, I could understand getting him fucking sticking to his guns and telling me no, that I was a liar, especially if I had had that behavior in the past, which I didn't. So it was a real bummer, but to get kicked out of a speech tournament, but it was also kind of badass. Like, at first I was like, I can't believe I got kicked out, I'm so embarrassed. But then when everyone was like, yeah, fuck him, I was like, yeah, fuck him. So yeah, Mr. Ellis did apologize to me, but he still says he didn't believe that I was not wearing an earring, but he will let it go because there's no way to tell or whatever. So I'm like, fuck him. To this day, I don't know where he is, but I also don't care. So there you go. All right, there you go, the retainer. So I guess the moral of that story is don't call me a liar or my dad will beat you up, which has been a story of my life, I guess. There you go. Thanks, guys, for checking it out. I hope you enjoyed that story. And tell your friends to subscribe on iTunes, rate the podcast. That'd be great. If you want to support the podcast, please go to johnwayneisdead.com, where you can check out all of the books that I have available. Yes, I am a published author. I have one of my latest book on Grindhouse Press, Death Packs and Left Hand Paths, and then I have Charged Land and the Porn Star Retirement Plan, Ant Poster, and of course, John Wayne Lied to You, the book for which this podcast has been spawned from. Check them out. They're all available on Amazon. All the links are on my page, johnwayneisdead.com, or search on Amazon, or you can buy them directly from me in the store on the johnwayneisdead.com page, and I'll send you freebies and fun things and drawings and all kinds of cool stuff. Also, go to the shows page on the website to find all the places John Wayne is Dead will be playing coming up, and where I will be appearing at conventions. I have a bunch coming up on there too, so please check that out. And yeah, buy a book. Buy my book. And thank you so much. I will talk to you, which is actually me talking to myself in a library of evil, next week. Bye.
Mockingbird Network.